Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Alistair, if I were to say to you the words, a simple, clean design with quality, durable blades at a fair price, what would be your number one guess as to what it is that I'm talking about?
Some kind of new startup helicopter company.
It's the durable blades that set this helicopter company apart.
No, wait. Would you be talking about Harry's razors?
I'm talking about Harry's razors. The people who have brought you this episode of Two in the Think Tank. Harry's.
In collaboration with us.
Oh, sure. I mean, but I think it's mostly Harry's at this point.
That's true.
Yeah. They've got a special offer for our listeners of the podcast that allows them to support themselves by buying blades, which support the podcast and also support the Harry's Corporation. So either way, everybody wins. Whether it's your face, the Harry's Corporation, or the podcast that you care about supporting, purchasing this trial offer, which I believe is free, is the way to do it.
Are we going to talk about a little bit more?
We're going to talk about a little bit later on in the podcast, and hopefully I'll have some more information for you. Boom. Happy I got Harry's podcast supporters every day. Hot crossed beef for breakfast. Everybody. Yes. Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch ideas.
I'm Alistair George William Tromblay Virtual.
And I am Andy.
And joining us in the podcast studio is the bowl of sesame noodles herself, Stephanie
Brocci. Hi, thanks for having me again.
Thank you for being back. As soon as you're in the country, we put you in the pod tank.
Straight from the airport this time.
Yeah. We fly her in, We strap her down.
Mm-hmm.
We wheel her across the tarmac.
We said, Steph, the tank is low on resources right now. We need a hot Steph injection.
Oh.
I'm so sorry.
Oh.
No, it's okay. Use it. Mm. You know, things come from emotions.
Mm. Yes. That's right. One such emotion is
disgust.
Do you think anybody's ever scalped? Not scalped. Sorry.
I mean,
this is not that much better than scalping, but pierced. Like, you know, get a piercing that goes through the skull.
Gotta be. I reckon we could find a way to just. Because people are always falling onto spikes. You know how people are always falling onto spikes, and the spikes are going up sort of through the brain, and everyone's like, it's amazing. It didn't touch any of the bits of the brain that do anything, right? So just pierce those. It's been determined already by all these people falling onto handy spikes. Now we know. So we just turn that into a fashion thing. You can get spike up through under the jugular.
It goes up through the belly, misses all the organs. And then goes through the neck. Because I think as long as you're not piercing the neck itself and there's like a hole in your ear hole, that's the real problem.
Okay. Yeah, you go up
through there and then up through the head and then just a little poke out through the skull like that.
So, with a little ruby on it or something.
The only bit that you see is the tiny little tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, and pokes maybe, up. Maybe like a little bit of the rod at the bottom.
Okay.
Coming out of the thigh.
Yeah,
out of the thigh.
With a ruby on it.
Yeah, exactly. Ruby each end, tumped and tailed.
What about, because Frankenstein's monster, is it him who has the bar that goes through his neck like that?
Very yeah, well, correct. There's definitely bolts there. I never realized that there's probably a bar in there.
I guess.
Yeah.
Like, that's a pretty extreme piercing.
It is, yeah.
And I'm actually shocked that we haven't seen that in a single person.
Right.
Yet. So that's the transverse neck stud.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the what would it be?
Yeah.
I don't know the opposite of transverse.
Yeah.
other
obverse. I don't know.
Universe.
Universe. The universal next stud that goes in the other direction, which is, you know, much more alternative. You know, if you want to prove to people that you're hardcore and you are alternative.
Yeah.
This is very alternative.
And then if you get
this is an alternative to all the people who don't have a spike that goes from their thigh to the top of their head.
But if you get both, then you can be like multiverse.
Oh, yeah, every direction.
Piercing situation.
And then you could get yourself installed in some kind of a gimbal where you could gyrate in every, not gyrate, you could rotate in every degree of freedom.
And I think that big pole going down the middle of your body might actually impede some of your gyrating.
You reckon?
It could. I mean, it could have been initially invented as an anti-gyration thing, you know, like
to stop the hips from, you know, turning people on with
part
their gyration.
Like river dance training. Mm. Michael river Flatley, training. He had one of these.
That's right. And it was also around when, you know, when Elvis the Pelvis was performing on TV and they were trying to start, you know, they were like, oh, young people are going to start doing
this. This is a little provocative.
This. Yeah, so they started installing this in their daughters and sons.
Downwards. Can we do it downwards or upwards, Alistair?
Yeah, I mean, look, we're not going through any of the Orify. We're creating new.
So it's a brand new Orify.
Yeah, that would be horrifying. Is that what you just said?
I was horrified.
I was horrified. So I mean, it could be obviously started as an ancient anti-gyration technique.
Ancient.
1951. Ooh.
It's the full flatly, they call it.
Oh, and then also the one through your neck though could be a good way of like, you know, like if you wanted to dangle from your neck, but like, because I mean, your neck should be able to hold your whole. I mean, it can hold
it
your
should,
head up,
shouldn't it?
You think it would hold your whole body up, like it dangle, you can
hold your neck up. It should be able to hold your body down.
Exactly.
That's how that works,
isn't
it?
I'm picturing a judo match between you and your neck. Your neck somehow gets you in a position where it's like, oh, got ya.
I think we've talked about the use of the neck in fighting. Is that a thing we've talked about on the podcast? Because obviously the giraffes do it.
Mm.
You know, you've seen the videos of the giraffes fighting?
Maybe. Or
they just sort of lash each other with their necks.
Oh.
It's full on.
Yeah.
It's real full on.
I have a bad neck just from like using a computer. I can't imagine how bad it would be if I had to fight.
Do you look
a
down a lot while you're using a computer?
Yeah.
Do you put it at your feet and you stand up and just.
I do a full forward fold. Computer on the ground, feet on the ground.
Yeah. Oh. So you're standing up completely straight, computer at your feet. But then you just tilt your head down and your eyes, like, maximum angle to try to see the screen. Oh, these ergonomic chairs are not helping.
You know how there's, like, standing desks? Mm. There's also a bed one where it suspends the laptop above you. So you're lying down and typing above you.
But I wanted to have one that was the fetal position.
Oh. Like,
where you're on your side, sort of curled up. And the keyboard is sort of on your knees, and the screen is sort of down there, so that you just curl up away from the world, and you can still respond to emails.
That's good.
Yeah.
I would like that.
I think when the world is in a bad state, a fetal position desk that you can keep working when all around you has gone wrong is useful.
Yeah.
Right.
And you could install it like in the womb.
Right, get people on there at an early...
Exactly.
Onboard them early.
Mm.
Get on board them, get them online.
Well, then, if that was the case, you would never have to leave the fetal position.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
You can just spend your whole life curled up, connected to the internet.
What about the part where you have to be born through that small tunnel? Do you think you could manage to, maybe they could redesign the model there,
needing a redesign for a long time,
so.
To be fair.
Well, maybe
it's
while
not
they're
ideal.
Inserting the rod, they could do some other.
No, but this is, you're not going to be able to use the fetal position keyboard if
course.
You've got the flatly.
Really, these two are the antithesis of each other, aren't they?
That's what makes the flatly piercing so alternative, because everyone else is in the fetal position. It really straightens you up.
Unless you could be in the flatly fetal, which is essentially...
The flatly fetal. It's like stiff as a board on your back.
Yeah.
Corpse pose.
And then maybe the baby in, like, you know, because you could change the fetal position as whatever position you're in when you're a baby, in the fetus, Wait, no, wait, not when you're in the fetus.
Ah, you're right.
Yeah, so it's whatever position you're in. So when I was in there, I would just have my arms out like a monster and my fingers curled over and I go, rah! And for me, that's
and
the fetal
straight
position.
Back.
Straight back, going like that in a pained face. For me, that's the fetal position. That's what I was like because of the big rusty metal bar going through my mama.
Rusty now. Well, I was thinking we were at least using surgical grade stainless steel, but no, this is cast iron. This is like an old pot.
At the time, it was easier to just use what was at hand.
Everyone had an iron rod at hand in 1951.
Yeah, you just use a fence paling or something. A fence impaling.
I don't think that's a pun. I think probably the word impaling just comes from the word, or the word paling comes from the word impaling or whatever. The same root word.
How about this? A fence.
That's like trying to do a pun that's like, today, something, something, yesterday.
Andy, some of us are trying to find new awful ways of doing puns. And I think finding one that's offended you, I think, is a great achievement for me.
Alternative puns is, I don't know, there's something in it.
Yeah, I'm an old punner.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if there's a type of pun that's just words that the combination of letters kind of look the same. Like the word cool, right? The C and the O and the O and the L. That O and the L, you know, if you put them close enough together, they probably just look like a D.
It's like cod.
So it's cod, right? So it's not. It's an alternative form of pun.
Yeah.
You know, it's one that's just created by like bad letter spacing. Or, yeah. Is that kerning?
Kerning, yeah.
Kerning. You know.
So kerning is alternative punning. What's kerning?
Kerning is like in design, like how far apart the letters are from each other, the space between the letters.
Kerning punning.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. This is, so in what context would you use this cool cod kind of pun?
Maybe something about Cape Cod and Cape Cool.
Cool Cod, by the way, that is a band name for George.
Cool Cod.
How's
cool
he going, cod. By the way?
Well, he can't find a band name.
Still.
Turns out, there's a secondary brother, as you may know, called Dave.
Yeah.
And
is Dave the problem?
And Dave is up there as one of the main problems.
One of the two problems.
Yeah, one of the two.
The other one's George, I guess.
The other one is George. Right. And then the third one is sort of the way that they work together.
Ah, the sort
the
of
space between them.
Yeah.
Super organism that is created from.
What is happening?
I just found that really satisfying. But my real laugh, I thought, wasn't enough to express how satisfied I found it. So I thought, I'll top this up with a little extra laugh.
Oh, this will be this will let you know. It's like, I'm putting another man's laugh in this. That's how you know. There's two men laughing. There's me and the man that I invented to do the laughing for me.
What the fuck is happening?
Oh, look, I'm adding this second man laughing. Laughing
it
for extra
compliment.
It's true
that like, laughing only ever denotes, like, I've found what you've said amusing, really. Like, that's the one meaning that it tends to have.
Or my evil plans have come to fruition.
Yeah. But maybe we could, you know, there's a language possibility in laughter codification. Like, if you laugh high-pitched, it's evil. If you, I don't know.
You're right. Yeah. You're right. Well, yeah, we need to lock that down, I reckon.
The language of laughter.
I think also, because, you know, the evil laugh, all my evil plans have come to fruition, that's only really a laugh that you hear a solo laugh, right? You only hear that once. You never get a full audience of evil laughter. Mm. And I think that would be a great alternative to the comedy festival, which is like Melbourne International sort of evil scheme extravaganza, right? And it's people up there. And then all the audience is evil, obviously.
Well, maybe all the performers are evil and there's only one audience member for each time.
Okay, that's...
You go in, and then they go, ah!
It's very good. Yeah, so there's just one big black chair, right? In the audience
with
area.
With a white cat sewn to the right hand.
Maybe the chair is facing away from you, and you perform all your evil schemes until you get, and you try and get your laugh rate up, your evil laugh rate. But I would also like a full audience of evil laughter as well, because it would be nice to hear what that sounds like.
Well, that's what I want. I want a whole audience. It's a bunch of evil.
I thought you said there was only one evil person.
No, there's only one audience member who is the person who's not the evil person, and everybody else is the performer.
Okay.
Right. And so you go there, and this is how you enter, right?
Yeah.
You stand in this kind of like metal kind of standing tray.
I can totally picture what you mean. Right.
And your arms.
Isn't that an elevator? Metal standing tray?
It could be.
But Jetstar have introduced that in some of their planes, haven't they? They just get strapped to a metal tray.
Your arms get shackled in like this.
Yeah.
And then your head gets shackled in.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And then you get kind of like, just along a conveyor belt, you get brought in, and then you get spun around to face them, and it's like
there's like 50 evil.
It's as if the plan of all these evil people was to finally trap you and get you, and so when they see you, they're like, like that. And then they got you. And then, I don't know, maybe like acid comes and pours on you.
Or a laser is moving towards you across the durational performance.
Yeah, and then shark nips at your pinky toe.
I'm trying to picture it like, I can't understand what's the dynamic. Who's the audience and who's the performer then?
Well, the experience is there for the person who stands in the middle.
And gets the acid on them.
Yeah. So that's an experience for them, right? And the performance that they're witnessing is experiencing the laughter like they're a comedian.
This is so complicated. Well, I love it. All the dynamics are topsy-turvy. All the performers are laughing. And there's lots of them, and they're evil. But the audience is the one having the experience.
Yeah.
It's like direct inverse of stand-up comedy. No?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Multiple performers who are laughing.
Yeah.
A single strapped-in audience member on a standing tray.
Look, I've got to tell you, I've realized partway through this that Steph has actually already created an art piece like this once.
Remind me.
Well, really, all of your performances I would liken to having acid poured on you.
Once Steph put on essentially a comedy art exhibition. And there was like a floor covered in whoopee cushions.
Oh yeah.
There was a donut thing. What was the donut thing?
Donuts were what you were trying to get to by walking over the whoopee cushions.
Right. Yeah.
It was art.
Exactly. And then there was
probably
some comedy.
The only good art that's ever been done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was one room that you walk in one at a time, and then you walk out into the room and you're the only person. You're on stage as soon as you walk through the curtain, and there's an audience there, and they're laughing at whatever you say.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
I forgot about this.
Yeah. Well,
it's so good.
It started as that they would laugh at whatever you say, and then the audience that we'd got bored, and so they started fucking with people, and so if they'd be like, okay, for the next guy, just give him nothing.
No.
And they would walk in, and they'd heard through the wall like a lot of laughter. So they were expecting
Did that happen to John Bennett?
I don't know. Probably. Probably. That's usually what happens to John Bennett when he walks out on stage. Am I right?
Johnny. Sorry. Turn that off.
Cop that, our friend John Bennett.
Take that. But I think there is something really nice in the moment where the evil laugh that you're pretending to do turns into the real laugh of you reacting to the fact that you've just done an evil laugh. There's like a nice transitional moment where I know the difference between your two laughs.
Mm.
Yeah.
And he only has two.
So what do we do with this? Is this a...
Well, it's a philosophical thing. If we could identify the moment in which in the transition at which it is identifiably evil and then also identifiably not evil, maybe we could then identify the essence of evil. and we could extract that. See, if you've got an evil laugh and a non-evil laugh,
yeah.
right, then all we need to do is we need to overlap, possibly using Fourier transforms, okay. the waveforms of the two different types of laughter.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we're able to subtract the devil's addition. Yeah. We're able to use the devil's addition subtraction to subtract your regular laugh from your evil laugh. And what does that leave us with? Just pure evil, okay? Oh. And now we just play that sound of pure evil, pump it into a room or whatever, and we can drive any man insane or woman.
Or even a pig.
You'd have to test it on pigs first, I reckon.
Yeah,
Before sending it out onto the battlefield.
Yeah.
He looks upset. I don't know. He hasn't looked upset before, though.
Yeah,
he's
look,
a pig.
Oh, here you go, little fella. You're not going to fart anybody like in this state. Here, let me play this weird altered sound.
Evil pig.
Oh, it'd be great to work to be like somebody who got to experiment on things in the military.
Oh, my God. Wait for the evil laugh.
I think this pure evil idea.
Pure evil, right?
Sound terrorism, though. That's like, I don't know. That's unexplored.
It seems to be a thing that people think that this is happening in the embassy in Cuba.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In the US embassy in Cuba, everyone's like, I feel really nauseous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
I think they've discovered that was nothing.
A mass sort of
like delusion,
hysteria.
Yeah,
right.
But maybe you don't even need to invent the pure evil sound. You just need to, like, sow a seed of mass hysteria.
Tell everyone we've invented the pure evil sound. I mean, that's quite good, isn't it? Like, you put everyone in an environment and you tell them we'll be pumping in a sound that turns you pure evil. And then you watch as they become pure evil. And then at the end you say, aha! And there was no evil sound at all.
The sound of pure evil is me telling you that I've invented the sound of pure evil.
Oh my God.
It's just that sentence.
That was a really good, that's a really good, yeah.
Twisty flip. It's a flip and twist.
It's a flip and twist.
You wouldn't be able to do that with a full flatly. Or maybe you could. Maybe the flip and twist. If you've got the full flatly and the full Frankenstein, flipping and twisting is pretty much
your, pretty much all you can do.
All you can do.
You've got about as much movement as a gyroscope, right?
Mm, yeah.
Oh, you could use that Frankenstein piercing and extend it out so people can't get out through doors.
Unless they turn.
Unless they turn. A little bit.
Unless they've ever carried anything through a door.
But you could get a back and forward one as well.
And then they have to twist and tilt.
Yeah. Yes.
Unless they've ever moved a couch, they'll never be able to get out.
One of those four-cornered couches.
I mean, if stopping people getting through doors is really what we want to do, then maybe while we're shoving all these spikes through their neck, we could just kill them.
Yes, or close the door.
Yeah, exactly. Have you guys heard of locks?
Kill them. I mean, if there was one idea that was stupid at the time, I think it was murder.
Can I just say, I saw your show yesterday and I loved it so much. Congratulations, you just finished the festival.
Thank you very much,
lovely
Stephanie Brocci.
It was so good and I hope you do it again and again and again.
Well, there's a chance it could be the last thing we do and then we just continue doing this for the next 40 years.
During our Magma show.
Yeah.
Well, I think we will. There's a good chance that Magma will once again arise at the Fringe Festival in September.
Yeah,
and so keep an open mind
and and eyes
and calendar. Yes.
And we've got the highest. Thank you, by the way. We've got the highest review you can get from a bowl of sesame noodles.
Yeah. When I signed up to the sesame noodle review. mailing at letter, I thought it would be reviews of sesame noodles. It turns out it is reviews by sesame noodles of comedy festival shows. And this has received the highest award for sesame noodles out of a possible four.
One bowl of sesame noodles out of a possible one bowl of sesame noodles. Ah, but I didn't tell you in the bowl of sesame noodles, I have eaten one noodle. I don't
know, still about room for improvement.
Still room. I mean, you got to leave that in there. there was something we were talking about.
Yes.
I had an idea. With
no, there was.
Play people the sound of pure evil.
Pure evil, yeah.
And they become evil.
Mm.
And then...
I mean, you know, there's smells. There's other yes. things.
Smell of yes. pure evil.
Mm.
mm. I think, there's something about the idea of this, you know, all this stuff there. But you know what? Let's move on. Let's pick another topic. Eggs, eating things.
I had some eggs this morning.
No, but a carnivorous egg.
Hey?
That's really interesting, though, isn't it? an egg.
What?
An egg that has hunger, right? But of course, if the egg were to
hunger for your touch.
Yes. But the size of the egg is very fixed, you see. It can't grow.
Yes. So, right? You can only get
so if it were to eat anything, it would crack and die. But it's hungry. It seems like a hell.
Yes, and if it was to move in any way, it would also crack.
If it were to move, if it were to open its mouth, it has a mouth, but it can't open its jaws, for then it would crack and die.
Because it doesn't have a jaw. It just has shell.
Mm.
But what is a shell?
Yeah.
If not an unformed mouth and jaw that you cannot move. I just thought, look, maybe when
just an egg with motivation. It seems to be that like okay, how about this?
Mm.
Right? It's some sort of a chicken. Right. But one that never emerges from the shell.
Yes.
Lives its whole life inside the shell. Right, still has hopes and dreams. Has a form of locked-in syndrome.
Yes, right? Locked in the egg.
Locked in, egged in. Right, shell locked in. And right, and
shell,
so that,
shell shed.
It lives its whole life inside the egg, right?
Mm.
And then we somehow get to see its dreams. Thank you.
Remember when you wrapped up eggs in tin foil and told your children that's what an Easter egg is?
what do you mean? 2 days ago.
2 days ago.
2 days ago.
Now that is the definition of pure evil.
Steph Brocci said that was the saddest thing she'd ever heard.
You boiled eggs, though. You boiled them.
We boiled them.
You hard boiled them. Before that or after?
Yeah, before. Okay. So we hard boiled the eggs.
Okay.
Right. These are children. They're 2 years old. They don't know.
Yeah.
They haven't been allowed to eat chocolate.
Sure.
So for them, an egg is just simply a shiny thing.
Yeah.
With a particular shape. So we boil the hard-boil the eggs.
And then what did one of them say?
So we hard-boiled the eggs. We wrapped them in foil. We hide them around the front room, the living room. The boys wake up in the morning. They run around very excitedly, finding all the eggs and put them back in the egg carton for us. And then we peel the eggs and we cut them and we put them on a plate for breakfast.
Mm.
And we sit Arlo down in front of his plate of egg and he says, I don't like the Easter Bunny.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard. My God.
It's really beautiful in the way. I mean, now you're not going to have to bother with this.
Exactly, you see.
Thing.
We've really nipped it in the bud.
Yeah.
All this childhood wonder kind of a thing. You know, people always have the dilemma of, do I tell my children that the Easter Bunny doesn't exist? Or when do I tell my children that Santa Claus isn't real? This way, when we tell our children that the Easter Bunny doesn't exist, they'll be relieved.
Nothing
they'll
but relief.
Yeah.
Thank God. That
Thank God.
Creep.
I mean, there's a way in which you can get them to just not think about it at all because they go, oh, well, that thing doesn't provide anything of value to me. It provides breakfast, which is the same thing Mom and Dad do.
Mm.
And so therefore
but
this
now,
thing
in this
is irrelevant.
In this version, I have to do some work, and also they're cold because they hard-boiled them the night before.
Did you look, oh, you gave him
wow, he thought about it. It's even worse.
Yeah. I guess if you pick
it
up the
like
hot...
a good idea 2 days in a row.
Yeah. that idea you had to hold in your head for
murder,
a long
murder is for some reason always worse when there's pre-planning, isn't it?
Premeditated disappointment.
Childhood trauma.
I only realised recently that it's a rabbit leaving eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Rabbits don't have eggs.
No.
Now, this is a very good premise for a stand-up comedy bit you've got here. So
like, because I only realised because in France, the eggs come from bells. Easter bells ring and eggs.
Stupid.
And I was like, that is dumb. That does not make any sense. Where are the bells? Why can't we hear them? Why are there eggs in bells? Like, I don't understand. At least a rabbit, you know. And then I was like, at least a rabbit.
It should be.
Rabbits don't have eggs.
That's right. It should be an Easter snake.
Yeah, now we're talking. All right.
The Easter snake came through our house last night.
And it would also explain how they get into little, like, crevices.
Oh, yeah, exactly. All the crevices.
They can flatten themselves out and go under the door. And, look, the snake was in your room last night. Oh.
Maybe I'll tell the boys that the hard-boiled eggs were brought by the Easter snake. How about
exactly.
that?
Yeah. See, that's better.
And
now they
one in every five has a baby snake in it.
Sure. Cool.
Yeah, and you could open up the foil and it's just filled with, like, just falls apart like a. I don't like.
What accent did you say my children had there?
I don't know. I feel like they're sort of Eastern European. I don't like a snake. And this is how you can get them to like the Easter bunny again.
Easter.
Yeah, he was better than the Easter snake. That's all he had going for him.
The Eastern bunny.
You think the Easter snake?
But on the premeditated murder.
Right.
Surely organization is a virtue. Right? We applaud people from organization. And therefore, surely, murder is a certain amount bad.
Yeah.
Right? 50 on the bad scale. But organization is probably like a 2.
Mm-hmm.
So surely premeditated murder is only a 48, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, sort of people who leave their murder to the last minute, that's not a virtue. That's like a 54.
Yeah.
Right?
And like so, serial killers with like a spreadsheet,
they actually
like make more points every killing they do as long as it's well organized.
As well, exactly.
So you can work your way back to zero.
Well, I don't know if you can ever work your way back to zero, but you could sort of cancel out a couple of the murders. So like as you go, it's like when you stay at a hotel longer, you pay less per night.
Is that true?
No. Is that true?
How long can I stay before I'm paying nothing per night?
Before they're paying me.
Yes.
Hello. I mean, it's a long-term investment plan. That costs me a lot of money.
More in the short term.
So how could you, because I want to understand this logic, how could you do a murder but also it be zero on the sort of evil scale?
Well, I mean, like, okay, we just got to line up all the virtues. What are they? Punctuality.
Okay, so you do it on time. But then that involves premeditation.
Carbon neutral, right? You know, offsets. You're buying offsets.
Mm-hmm.
Every step
of the way, you're planting a tree.
Yes. Every drop of blood is used as fertilizer.
You give them a sip of water to replenish their fluids.
Yes. You know, I think...
We always end up talking about murder when I come.
Do we? Okay.
It's good.
You've got out your pawpaw.
Yeah.
Pawpaw ointment.
Yeah.
Your lips, they dry.
Yeah.
Chapped.
Bit chapped.
Yeah.
Bit chapped.
Do you think...
It gets pretty dry in
here. Do you think the word for chapped should be different for women?
For sure.
Yeah.
Chipolated.
Chipolated. Is Chipolata the female version of a chap? Hello, chaps. Hello, Chipolates. Chipolatas.
Chaps, Chipolatas.
Okay, Chipolates, right?
Chipolates. Oh, my God. My perfect form of exercise.
It's a sausage-based exercise.
Finally.
I thought it was a chip-based Pilates exercise. Chip Pilates.
You know what? You very much.
What about sausages and chips? You know, it's like it's a Pilates class that's happening at a greasy spoon.
Yeah,
you know,
it's definitely English.
Here's another one: yogurt lattes. It's yoga lattes, but with yogurt. It's it's combining that sort of stretching, high intensity, possibly hot exercise with thick dairy,
thick fermented dairy. Hello.
It's efficient, though, if you can be eating while exercising.
Mm.
I think there's something in it.
Yeah, it's a circle of life.
Yes, and there's yogurt in it.
In everything.
Okay, so what are we just doing? More blends of...
Yeah. Food and
you've heard of blends of two exercises. Well, what about two exercises blended with one food and a location that might cook that food?
Zumban me.
Exactly. Golf. Soccer.
Where's the food?
Golf soccer spaghetti.
Okay. Now we're talking. Golf soccer spaghetti. Yeah. Yeah.
Yogurt lattes.
Footballer soup.
Are you writing down golf soccer spaghetti?
Golf soccer spaghetti.
I mean, this sketch has got to go somewhere. What was the other one?
No. So why not off the rails?
I mean, golf. All right, you've got to hit. You've got to kick a big ball into a tiny hole. And you're just stamping it in there whilst wearing a funny outfit and eating a big plate of spaghetti and meatballs.
It's no less stupid than all sport. That's the good thing about it.
So essentially part of the sport is that you gotta actually burst the ball so that it can be crammed into that tiny hole.
And you can only burst it if you eat enough spaghetti to get the weight behind it. Carb loading.
I think a golf tournament in which the ball is too big to get into the hole is quite interesting. You know, it's because then we've transitioned into art. You know, we are making a statement about futility.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Which is one of the best statements to make, I think.
I think AFL makes a pretty good argument for futility myself. But
I think a lot of sports do. A lot of sports.
Hello, everybody. I am all sports. And I just wanted to tell you that this has all been an art piece. How did you put it?
Futility. Statement about futility.
On the nature of futility.
It's been a sports futility vehicle. Everybody. Yeah. Thank you.
I mean, but then a sports futility vehicle is a vehicle for sports futility.
Mm.
And so it's got to be something that carries sports futility. And is that sports themselves? Or is that something else? It's like a person who invents sports.
Can I change what we're talking about ever so slightly?
That would be so good to get us out of this.
But it's on the same theme. Basically, right? Because what happens, right? And this is the sketch concept, is that an arts administrator gets appointed as the head of the AFL, right? So at the moment, the CEO of the AFL is often somebody who has a bit of a history in sport, but also more often than not has a bit history in business, right? Like Andrew Demetriou, whatever his name was, he was the head. He'd previously been a car executive, great. Right?
Previously been a car.
Vin Diesel is a car. And we're back.
Yes.
Yes.
But in this situation, someone who's a former head of a gallery or something like that gets appointed to the head of the AFL, and they start changing the rules of the sport and, you know, adjusting things so that it becomes more artistic and makes more statements. So one would be putting the goalposts so close together that the ball can't get through the gap, right? And, you know, every change to the rules of any sport, there's always a lot of controversy. There's always haters. People are always uncomfortable about sports moving forward. But here we go. This is their vision, and they managed to get it through the panels or whatever, and then it's in. And then, you know, now this is now part of sport.
Which would mean that technically then you'd kind of just be removing that 6-point goal. You'd just be making every goal a one-point goal.
Mm, mm,
or sure. You could make the goal the bit between the goalposts at one end of the field and the other end of the field. So all sides of the field is goal, bits that are now goal are out.
Yes, out. That's very narrow.
And you don't tell them until they start
playing. Oh, yeah, no.
Oh, yeah, that's out.
You don't tell them until the end of the game.
That's right. Okay, all of the Aussie Rules players are kept in a dungeon
for
the
whole
season.
Oh, and they don't learn.
They don't get to know what rules have changed, but they have to sort of figure it out during the game. But nobody ever goes. They also can't see the scoreboard so that they can go, oh, we get a point every time we kick. We get 6 points every time we kick it just through that big area. You don't want that.
No. But I wonder how long it would take for them to realise as well. If they could see and they could identify that, like, would they, like rats, learn from a reward system?
What would be the reward, though?
The reward is the points. Like, if they could see that they were getting points from kicking it through the thing.
Then I think they would learn. Yeah,
they would learn. How quickly would they learn quicker than a rat?
Footballers are smarter than rats. I'm not 100% sure.
The only way to test it would be to have a team of football players and a team of rats.
Doing the same.
Yeah. Playing against each other.
And which team works it out the fastest?
The cats versus the rats. And the rats are actual rats.
That's right. And the cats
are football players.
Holding on to cats.
Ah.
I don't know if that helps. Does that help your idea?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it all helps.
Can't wait.
But anyway, sports becomes arts. And see, this way they're open. They're probably up for more grants. You know, imagine if the AFL won the Doug Moran Prize.
Is that a portrait one?
Yeah.
I would love it if more sports were taking more of our arts funding away. I think that would be really beneficial.
Maybe this could come from the government, come from the ministry or something. They want to give more money to sports, take more money away from arts, but they're unable to get it through unless they just sort of change the sport a little bit so that it's more artistic.
Yeah.
And they put Ida Buttrose at the head of...
Ida Buttrose, yes, Ida indeed.
Have I not said her name properly?
No, it's just an amazing name to say. There's so many crisp syllables, so laden with meaning.
Yeah, and the word butt is in there.
The word butt is in there,
and then you butt rose, and it makes you think about like a butt with just a little bud coming out of its anus or something like that.
It's exactly what it is, yes. I think of a rose with a butthole.
Well, I just think of a slightly prolapsed anus. That's what it makes me
just
think
slightly,
of.
Just slightly,
though. Just slightly. Like, it's almost pretty. There's some beautiful rose colours. There's... things like that, and this is why it's a fun name to say, Ida Buttrose.
Ida. Hey, I'm going to say something about Harry's razors. Speaking of fun things to say and coming off the back of that great bit of chat, why don't I tell you about this offer that is available to all listeners of the Two in the Think Tank podcast, right? You can get yourself a bunch of Harry's stuff, right? It's $13 value trial set that you don't have to pay that $13. It comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. Weighted ergonomic handle, 5-blade razor with lubricating strip and trimmer, rich lathering shave gel, and Alistair.
What's that, Andy?
A travel blade cover. Now, we talk a lot about the travel blade cover on this show. Mm-hmm. It's probably our favourite player in the entire... you know, Harry's cast.
It's probably my favourite bit of plastic.
Yes. Maybe this is a good time for you to think about what's your favourite bit of plastic. But
tweet us online.
Yeah. Now, we always take a moment to celebrate the travel blade cover, but I've got to come clean with the listeners. I'm a hypocrite because recently we were clearing out our cupboard in the bathroom and I had two travel blade covers. And I threw both of them away. And then only a week ago, I had to go stay overnight somewhere and I was filming something in the morning and I needed a close shave and it came time to pack my Harry's razor into my backpack and I had to confront the mistake that I had made and the fact that I didn't have my travel blade cover. Everything was fine. The Harry's razor wasn't damaged in any way, but I was given a stark insight and a realisation into exactly why that travel blade cover is there and how thoughtful the good people at Harry's have been in giving you everything that you need in this trial set.
Yeah.
So it's a lesson there. I just want to say that I'm not perfect.
No, right? This is a hard way to find out that you're not perfect.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And in the future, the audience probably won't listen to me anymore when I talk about the Travel Blade cover, but I want them to know that I've been there.
Well, I'm glad that it hasn't damaged my authority. Hard one.
You're still pure.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's why we need you here.
Yeah, no, I think the Travel Blade cover is on my thing even when I'm not traveling.
Yes.
Even when I'm shaving.
Absolutely. I think of it as, well, the Earth is moving at some huge speed through space, so in a way we're always traveling.
Yes, yes.
And I actually find a way to pinch my skin in between the travel case and the blade to make it work. And it takes a lot of cream to keep it nice and, you know, smushy to get it in there.
All you got to do is go to harrys.com/thinktank. Make sure you go to harrys.com/thinktank to redeem your offer and let them know we sent you to help support the show. And, you know, that's it. That's it. But there is a little bit more. I'd just like to say that, you know, Harry's razors, they're just a good quality, no gimmicks setup. Right, that's how they kept the price down to an affordable thing that you're going to be able to. You're going to want to keep coming back.
They don't have those costly gimmicks.
The stupid, you know, handles that look like a fighter jet or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Or you get a mascot that looks like an elephant delivers it to your house.
Or whatever it is. Well, they don't do that. This won't. We guarantee that this won't be delivered by an elephant. Right, it's just a good quality razor.
A guy dressed as an elephant. It's a mascot.
Really good. Yeah. Really good. All right. Thanks very much, everybody.
Do you think you could shave an elephant? Like, first of all, you would get an elephant to agree to it, but...
Yeah, not unconsensually, for sure.
I mean, they've got hair on them, don't they?
But it feels like
it's quite coarse.
Like a bristle, I'd say. It's more like a bristle.
Mm.
Yeah. So you think you could make a toothbrush from...
Well, yeah, I think we talked about this last time I was on the podcast.
wait, really? Hair toothbrush?
Yeah.
No.
I'm pretty sure.
If not,
it feels like such a good idea.
That does feel like something you could sell in a shop in the cool part of town.
With like a bamboo, the stick part of a toothbrush called?
Bamboo stick. The stick part. Yeah. I think stick part is possibly the most technical term we could have used.
Yeah.
I think probably back in the day they probably made toothbrushes from like pig's hair or something like that. Which is full on to think that that's what you were using.
Mm.
Especially if it's actually true and I didn't just make it up just then. That's even more full on if it's true, right?
Yeah, but especially if that pig was now evil.
Oh, no. It heard the sound.
Yeah.
Right. But if we think that is bad, you know, shaving a pig to get its bristles to make a toothbrush, right, then surely a more defensible thing would be to genetically engineer a pig that is basically shaped like a toothbrush that can then remain alive, right? And you just keep it in a small sty.
Teacup pig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Toothbrush pig, right? You just keep it in a small sty next to the sink in the bathroom, right? You feed it scraps.
I'm pretty sure that the bottom of that sty couldn't be any dirtier than the bottom of any mug where people keep toothbrushes.
Oh, it's so fucked. It's the worst.
Yeah.
So that
you're in a share house and like after 3 years, you look in the bottom of the mug and there's just a layer of just...
Scum?
I'm going to call it scum.
And fuzz?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not
good. How much would you have to be paid to drink that?
To drink it all? I think first you would have to add... Just a little bit more liquid to
you
clean it off the sides.
Okay, you fill the cup. You take that mug, because that's a mug already, right? Mm. You chuck out all the toothbrushes. You fill that mug with boiling water. Halfway up?
Yeah.
Two-thirds of the way up, right?
Take the basic toothbrush, you spin it, just get a little stir. Burning hot.
Oh, but I guess by putting boiling water in there, you'd probably... be killing some of the community of germs, which would be so rich and vibrant by that point. Oh, think absolutely. How they've been able to evolve in that environment.
They're living off of sort of toothbrush and saliva, toothpaste and saliva kind of remnants.
It really is turning my stomach.
Yeah.
It is like the ocean floor. You think about the toothbrush, not the ocean floor, the canopy, the floor of the rainforest. You have the canopy of toothbrushes up there, the light filtering down, you know, and then here we have the leaf litter, the detritus. You know, some of the most rich ecosystem available in the entire biome. Right, and we have the scuttling of the little creatures as they rustle through the undergrowth there.
Exactly.
It would be beautiful.
And that's how you harvest new toothbrushes.
Mm.
That's a good idea. That's yeah. I was going to say, well, this is exactly how you could make the bed of this miniature pig toothbrush. Yeah. Mm.
If it could evolve.
It would live off of that kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, if you're genetically engineering it to be small, toothbrush-shaped, and have bristles that all grow in one direction, you may as well allow it to eat all the scum,
toothpaste scum.
That all your other lesser intelligent housemates who use regular toothbrushes allow them to feed off of.
So
that.
It scuttles around in the bottom of the mug, yeah, subsisting
off of that stuff. I mean, you can keep adding some, you know, like some sweet potato skins and some eggshells.
Okay, well, while we're genetically engineering it to eat that scum and be shaped and look like a toothbrush, right, why don't we genetically engineer it so that its anus is just above the bristles, right? Mm-hmm. And that it eats all that stuff and then poops out
pure toothpaste
back onto the brush.
Onto its own back.
Wow.
I mean, this is the circle of life.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Circle of life.
I was just thinking about, you know, veal, how veal is like a little cow that's put in a dark environment and it's not allowed to touch anything. But like this idea of creating a meat that is good because of its environment. Just thinking about the pig and the sound of evil, and there's something about like you could make a really powerful bacon or like some kind of a meat product by saying that your meat, your animal has been bathed in the sound of pure evil or, like, has been immersed in the sound of, I don't know, like, children laughing.
Mm.
Well, if we could,
for example.
The evilest thing you can think of.
But
it doesn't have to be evil.
No. Well, I mean, if it's children laughing alone in a hotel that you know to be empty, that's pretty evil.
That's right.
Yes.
Did anybody let that kid out? What kid?
There hasn't been a kid here for 45 years.
Did anybody let that kid out? You know, just that thing that you say when you know there's a kid. Anybody let the kid out?
I'll let the kid out. Construction. Look, I think that's a really good, because then you can do that thing. It's like, well, yeah, I think I'm really re-explaining your joke. But the veal thing, it's like, oh, you're putting them in an evil scenario. If we could just make it more evil. We also put spikes on the walls. We played an evil laugh at all times.
But what would be really good? Because why people feel bad about eating the veal that's been raised in that evil environment is that they think that somehow the veal is innocent. But if we could guarantee that the veal was evil by having played at this sound and turned it evil, then in fact eating the veal becomes a moral obligation.
You're doing the planet a favour.
You are, that's all true. Of us, yes, by removing the stain of darkness.
That's true, yeah. But also by putting more evil around it and treating it worse, you're making the meat taste better.
Yes.
You see? And so that's all gives you another moral obligation to eat it.
Because it tastes so good.
Because it would be
a crime. A real crime.
To not eat it.
It does feel like as we're becoming more and more aware of plant-based diets being like one of the biggest things you can do towards, you know, reducing emissions, that the meat industry might need to be coming up with stuff like this to incentivize meat eating amongst humans.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, the more plant diets become viable, the more evil it is to eat meat, and therefore the better meat becomes to eat.
I think we're missing a small step. It's just a little one.
I think we say the word evil enough, we're going to get this thing across
evil,
the line.
Evil, evil. I think we have enough sketch ideas to go to our three words.
Yes.
Yes.
More evil.
And also, yes. By the way, just a little note. Evil, obviously, is the word live backwards.
Yes.
Right? People hate live sheep exports. Flip that around. People love evil sheep exports.
Evil peace. I mean, sport. That almost sounded like it could have been it backwards, right?
What's Knievel backwards? I'm not bothering to think about it.
I don't know
how
to spell Knievel.
And Levyink. Levyink.
Levyink.
It'd be so good if it meant something.
Levyink Live. Does mean that. Levy your ink. Levyink.
I'm sorry. Let's do the three words.
Okay.
And also, while we're here, thank you to everybody who came to see Magma.
Oh, my God.
And not especially everybody, but also especially those crazy people who came here from overseas to see the show. There was like 4 or 5 people who were here to see.
Not all of them who came exclusively just to see us, but while they were here in their limited time enjoying this great nation of ours, they took some of that time to see Magma.
Sometimes more than once. I apologize that I've forgotten his name, but somebody delayed his honeymoon with his wife so that he could come and see like Do Go On live and us do our show and Matt Stewart's show. East Insanity, thank you so much.
Eastern European, Alistair.
Eastern European. All right, so three words from today is from Daniel J, his Let's Play podcast.
Daniel J's Let's Play podcast.
Maybe.
It's Daniel K's Let's Plays. Unless there's also a Daniel J's Let's Plays. I think it's Daniel K. I think you'll find. Daniel K. Oh, yeah, not Daniel Ch.
Okay, while I double check.
Well,
this,
I mean, I'm so good at it, I can just keep doing different Daniels with a different consonant on the end.
All right, well, let's say that.
Please.
I want to believe it.
Daniel.
Daniel.
Daniel K's. Daniel. Daniel.
Oh, it definitely is Daniel K.
Oh, wow.
I think my K.
Never has being right felt so empty.
Daniel K must have been auto-corrected to Daniel J.
Yeah, right.
Daniel K.
Daniel K, Let's Play podcast. All right, he's given us three words, which is the standard number.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready, Steph?
I'm ready.
Permian?
What?
Permian.
What?
Does Andy know what that means? Because I don't.
I believe it was one of the eras of Earth's geological history, the Permian.
When it had real curly hair.
Nagel.
What is it?
Permian. It's a geological era.
Is it where permafrost comes from?
Oh, no.
But it's where permian was it frost permanent? Comes
I think it was one of the extinctions we had. The Permian extinction may have been
It's great that you're saying that because the three words are Permian mass extinction.
Oh, yes. There you go.
Oh, do you think it could be the extinction of mass? There was no more weight. It's actually the deletion of that particle. What's that little subatomic particle?
The Higgs boson.
Higgs boson,
Steph. Higgs boson.
Higgsy. David Higgs boson.
Yes, when he was released from Guantanamo Bay, I imagine a fair weight was lifted off his shoulders. I imagine he felt pretty light then. Whoa, well, this is what it is. Mm. We can use the Large Hadron Collider in CERN to identify the weight, the particle that results in weight being lifted off the shoulder of those recently released from long-term incarceration without charge. Charge, electrical charge, that is. No, not that. Don't write that down.
No, but we're gonna say that was a very Andy idea.
Yeah,
and I
thanks.
Want you to
it
know
was probably
that
one of the most Andy ideas.
You have just been yourself so purely.
Yeah, it's so nice, isn't it? To be me.
Okay, like, what should we think about this?
But what about the opposite of a black hole?
Okay, white hole?
No, not
white,
a hole.
Oh, not a hole, white
nose.
Thing. White entranceway. No, wait, that's kind of a hole.
It's got to be a protrusion of some kind, right?
White protrusion.
White lump.
White lump.
White plug.
What's a plug?
What's what you put in a hole?
Yeah,
it's the opposite of a hole.
Yeah, but what else can you put in a hole? A lump.
Lump.
Oh, a nose. Through some kind of black glory hole.
You put a nose in a hole. Normally you have a hole and a nose.
Yeah, but what
two.
If that
I've
nose
got two.
Already has two holes? You put another one in there. Put that nose and it holds through the hole.
Would you consider this to be listenable?
Yes. Absolutely.
I was just thinking because, you know, a black hole obviously is a very dense area, right, that sucks everything in. Right? White hole would have to be very light, you know, very light, almost the opposite of dense, or almost the opposite of heavy.
So it's an anti-gravity thing? Or
but it's is it a marshmallow?
Boring. It's kind of
marshmallow
boring.
Could be a marshmallow. Mm. Marshmallow that smells. I mean, it feels like it would be, you know, something you want something that's exciting to find in space, which I imagine a huge marshmallow would be.
Marshmallow.
but then also you could... You wouldn't.
I think finding a marshmallow in space would probably be the most incredible thing that NASA could do at this point, right? Because at the moment we're looking for intelligent life out in space. Is anybody looking for like giant marshmallows?
You can't see the intelligent life for all the fucking marshmallows.
All the marshmallows.
I mean, it'd be amazing if that's what dark matter was.
Marshmallows.
Yeah, for some reason, it's so light and fluffy that all our beams that try to detect it just kind of pass right through it.
Or they just like sizzle it up and make it real crispy and delicious.
Like that on the brown on the outside. And it's like, and it's got that gooiness on the inside.
Oh, that's so good. The old, would you reckon they'd be pink or white marshmallows?
Mix it both.
Yeah, party mix. What about banana? How do you guys... Nah.
No? Not sure about that.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it?
That none of us are interested in it. It is interesting. Yeah, so like what would we see this as evidence of? Do you think that we would see this as evidence of...
Why is there no chocolate marshmallow?
Eh?
Well, why haven't we gone with any other flavours of marshmallows? Really settled on just a sort of a vanilla. Yeah. There's the pink and the white, but they taste exactly the same. You can't tell the difference, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's the next frontier.
Right, we'll just put other flavours in marshmallow. I mean, somebody at a sweet factory, they must always trying to put different flavours in different things. Nobody's done anything with marshmallow.
Well, you know when somebody revolutionised the jelly bean?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's only in the last 15 years, right?
And we're talking about jelly bellies. How
jelly bellies, you know, they came out and they were like, oh, there's like popcorn flavoured ones, and then there's like coffee flavoured ones, but and there's cinnamon. Are you not familiar with these?
Yeah.
Okay, right. But was there a second there where you forgot that they exist?
No, I didn't realize that was the revolution.
I think that was. I mean, right. for a long time, it was just kind of like
the different colors, but they're all just sugar flavour.
Okay, okay.
Except for black, which was just like hell. Because they found a way to go.
The black hole of jelly beans.
All right, we've nailed one flavour, and it's the one nobody wants. And how about the other flavours? How about sugar?
What purpose does it serve, the black one? It feels like it's doing something.
It's a reset or something. It's Jeopardy. It makes it a little bit like gambling.
Yeah.
People love that.
Yeah, maybe there's like a game design element in there.
It stops people from...
Just eating without looking. Indiscriminately. Yeah. It makes it an active pursuit. You know, you've got to engage your brain. You've got to be, you know, living in the moment and paying present. You've got to be present.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about how clever those were.
Yeah.
You know, I think there should be, like, if all fast food had things like that, like a thing of chips had some chips.
Chip roulette.
Yeah, exactly. Some like a few chips sort of had spider venom and something like that.
And you get paid $6 an hour to inject every fifth chip with spider venom.
And then like you got to go milk the spiders.
Coaxing the fang of a tarantula onto a burger.
I mean, you've got just like this sort of, like chain mail glove that you gotta grab him with. Come here! Oh, he's a feisty one. Anyway.
Yeah, no, but I think it's not a bad idea, like a roulette food system to really make you.
Well, but also just in general, licorice chips. I mean, you know, any kind of hot fast food licorice element, licorice sauce for chips. Let's try and get that off the ground. Just bad ideas for sauces, you know?
But imagine that licorice sauce if it was mixed with tennis and squash.
Tennis and squash.
Squash licorice sauce.
Yes, squash licorice. Squash each other.
Whoa.
Now look, is food roulette the
yeah, I think that's
for conscious eating? Food roulette for conscious eating. I would like that in, you know, you see the health food bloggers and they're making themselves like a nice, you know, like a nice kale salad. You're the first person I ever met who ate kale, by the way. And
I don't know how to feel.
No, you don't have to feel. You're full of goodness. It doesn't matter. You're going to live for a long time not feeling anything.
The kale's replaced my need to have an emotional.
You don't need
response.
To have an. You have a personality now.
That's great.
I'm so sorry. And they're making this kale salad, but then every seventh piece of kale. They're dipping in cyanide, or how about just another beef?
But cyanide or beef? I mean,
could be one or the other. Could go either way.
Those are some wide goalposts.
Yeah.
But you've got to with this roulette thing. I mean, with the black jelly beans, you see, at least they coloured them black, so you know they're going to be bad.
Yeah.
Right. But with your kale chips or whatever it is, why? If it's just cyanide, are they going to be a different colour or something like that? Or does one out of every 10 chips just kill you? Because then how is that conscious eating? That's just regular
conscious
eating
of your
with
own
a lot
mortality
of fear,
eating.
And, fear
exactly.
And then death.
Okay. If you needed to be something else.
Rocket roulette.
Okay. I know that sounds good. But
thank you.
That still didn't answer the question that we were trying to answer just then.
No, but I had to say it.
Yeah, no. No, you're right. Okay. So what about some of the pieces of rock are red. Perfect. And they're blood flavored.
Thank you.
There you go.
And I think there should be one in each bowl of salad that's like blue, and that gives you superhuman power. Like there should also
super
be a
speed.
Reward system that
you know, you can shit out bananas.
You want to eat the salad.
Exactly.
Despite the blood.
There'll be like 12 sort of blood lettuce things in there. And then one blue superhuman one. Like one that like, you know, at least like makes you pee out rainbows or something. You know, if you want that experience, you got to find the blue leaf, which means you got to eat your way through that salad. Don't just rummage through it to try to find
the blue one
and then just go, whatever. But then at some point people are going to just go, well, why don't we just make a whole salad full of blue lettuce?
Then people won't be consciously eating anymore. They'll just be eating fistfuls of superpowers.
Yeah.
Scoffing.
You know, that goes against the whole point of this entire magic lettuce scenario.
I know, but this is what people do.
You know, sure.
The sugar is the good thing, so let's just remove everything else that isn't sugar from the plant, extract that, and make jelly beans, and then make some of them black so they're conscious. It's the same cycle starting again.
But then we'll find out that superpowers give you cancer or something like that.
Well,
ultimately, superpowers are worse for you
than
smoking.
And then you cry, and then you cry, and then it's like a rainbow tear.
Rainbow tears. Man, if we can get that off the ground, if we can get some sort of a implant or whatever that lets you cry rainbows.
Yeah.
That'd go big on the internet.
I think that'd definitely be big.
Just get that up as a Kickstarter thing. It's a little thing, just goes in you. It's like a little printer cartridge, basically, that gets it's tiny, right? But very pure stuff. Gets locked into your little tear ducts there.
Mm-hmm.
You cry rainbows.
Cry rainbows. I think it'd be great for, like, drag queen performances.
Yeah. Mm.
Imagine that. You end a performance, you go, like that. Like rainbows running down your cheeks.
Oh, I can
cry a rainbow. Mm. Beautiful.
Why are there so many tears that look like rainbows? It's a company that's starting up. We've already got our possible video.
Great.
Okay, well, let's just run through the ideas real quick.
And yeah.
Wrap this mofo up. Okay, big spike piercing known as the flatly.
The full flatly.
The full flatly. Also the
flat leaf parsley.
Flat leaf fartley. That's when air comes out of your sort of pole hole.
Flatly fartley.
Like that. Like that's when you actually accidentally pierce your lung.
Oh,
every time
no.
You take a breath, a little bit of air.
That's exactly what you didn't want to happen.
Flaps the skin next to your pole and just goes. Yeah, I'm going to get that fixed soon.
I got some flatly fartly from my pole hole.
From my pole hole. And but you know, it was initially come up with as an anti-gyrating technology, but eventually it helped in the development of river dance and, of course, just a statement, alt. It's alt piercings. Because every alt has to have its own alt.
Yeah.
Mm. And then there's also the Franken piercing as well that's within there. Then we have the idea of laughing as a second man to give an extra compliment to a joke that you really liked, you know? You go, not only am I laughing, but this other man that I created. There are two men laughing here.
Yeah.
Or a woman.
It's a sample
a woman.
Size. Ah.
That's right. Pure evil is equal to an evil laugh minus a regular laugh.
Yeah.
See? And that's how you get
we've
pure.
Isolated it.
And then you take that sound using
Fourier transforms.
Fourier transforms. And then you play it to pigs. To test it on pigs and see if they become pure evil.
Yeah, that was the idea we had.
Mm.
It's the black sound.
That's the one.
Yeah.
You've got the essence of it there, Alex.
It was a dark sound. And then there's also... Oh, wait, no, I've written that it's also a sound that is pure evil to make you evil. We've already come up. What was the part where we was in a building?
Maybe we can't remember.
Can't remember. Sorry. Then we got the Easter snake. This is, I guess this is one way that you could just change it so that first of all the Easter bunny story makes more sense. Or, but also if your kids don't like the Easter bunny, you could say, well, okay, well this year the Easter snake
for whatever coming. Reason.
For whatever reason, let's say you made some huge mistakes.
But I think you could also do sort of what Hinduism has done with their deities, where they have sort of, you know, the opposites, like the creator and the destroyer. I can't remember which is which. But it would be good if Easter, instead of being sort of this mono creatural holiday with just the Easter bunny, if there was a dynamic relationship between the Easter bunny and then the Easter snake. The bunny delivers the eggs, but then the snake can come in and eat them, you know, swallow them, dislocate its jaw, swallow them whole, and just poop out the foil. Right, and then that or teaches kids something.
I thought it was going to be the snake lays the eggs, and the bunny, which is also the prey of a snake, often is its slave who has to deliver it against its wing.
Oh yeah, no good. Let's work slavery in.
Well, I mean, kids have to learn about the mistakes of history, you know, and also I think if you taught kids about slavery early on. They might realize that the way that they treat other kids sometimes is like that, like they're slave.
Making them deliver.
I have this memory of, like, I was being in like year two or three, and a guy said to me, he goes, "Hey Al," this is in French though, but he goes, "Hey Al, can you go and turn off that light over there? Oh, thanks so much," like that. And then I hear him say to the teacher, because we're all in line about to get out of the, he goes, "I noticed that if you pretend to be really friendly, you can get people to do anything you want." Like that.
How old would you reckon you were?
I would have been 5 or 6.
Oh my God. What a terrifying thing for that child to have realized at that age.
Yeah. He was also making out with people very early on. Like in year 4 or 5. Like macking out. Like laying on top of each other. Kind of like macking out.
Jeez.
I think it's because his parents were divorced. And then obviously we've got we've all heard of mixed sports, but what about sports, mixed sports mixed with foods? We got yogurt lattes, chipolatas, and golf soccer spaghetti.
That is not a sketch.
That is absolutely a sketch. I mean, it's like, this is a new, it's like trying to create a new business. But why just create one new sport? Mm-hmm. You know, because if you're the guy who invented yoga lattes, right, you're just a person who's like, I'm starting a, you know, I'm starting a you know, a room where people come and do yoga lattes. But then that's just one room.
Why not?
One thing. You're offering, you know, you don't, if people don't like that, then you're done, right? But if you've invented the idea of mixing sports, mixing mixed sports with foods, you can have a series of places that all do different things, and then you can start seeing which ones work the best. And you don't even need room. Sometimes it's outside.
It's like hybridization of hashtags as well. Hashtag food, hashtag sport, hashtag marketing-wise, it's genius.
It's actually genius,
You're getting all those markets on that.
Yeah.
And you can get celebrities from so many different things. You get all the celebrities from sports. You could have...
Jamie Oliver. Kicking a football.
Kicking a football to Ben Beckham. And then...
Beckham is eating spaghetti.
Then he was eating spaghetti that Jamie made.
Yeah.
And then he's lobbing
it. He kicks the ball to him. The ball's full of spaghetti. He opens up the ball.
Yeah. And then there's a whole team of all the women on the PGA Tour there. and they're trying to... stamp soccer balls into the holes.
What's not to like?
Then we got the art administrator who decides to change the AFL so that it'll be both different and more meaningful. And then, but also, people will tune in to see how the rules have changed. Some people will tune out, but one of the things is that sometimes it could just be back to normal. And so then they'll always be like, oh, I better just check this.
It's a bit of a roulette thing again.
Yeah. And also every time like 100 people unsubscribe, the rules get reset back to zero and it starts a new wave, or there's some way that feeds back into the re-rule generation.
It's a really good idea. Yeah. And every time 1 million people join up, that happens again as well.
The shape of the ball changes.
The shape of the ball changes, yes. And it becomes bigger than the
people. Or you add a ball.
Yes. Multi-ball. Yeah. Pinball rules. Yeah. And if you hit the ball with your paddle and it hits one of those other guys, it accumulates points. I couldn't think of a good
It was really good, Al.
Then you genetically engineer a pig to be shaped and like a toothbrush. And yeah. And then we got the best meat evil scenario. So you make meat more evil to make it better, more delicious.
And more defensible.
And more defensible, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then we've got the food roulette for the conscious eating, which is when you put the awful bit of food
in. It's a bit like the idea that we came up with for vegan deniability, where you go to a restaurant where one in every 10 meals is vegan but looks like meat, and then you can convince yourself that you didn't actually eat the meat.
That's right, yeah.
But, you know, it's a similar...
It's only like one in every 10 dishes has some meat in it.
Mm. Or something.
Well,
we've really fallen over the finish line today. Yeah.
And one final noise from Steph. Nice.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to the podcast. Stephanie Brache, thanks for being here.
Okay.
Can you promote one of your 10 Instagram accounts? Worry lines. Worry underscore lines.
Worry underscore underscore lines. Mm-hmm. It's very dumb.
It is a great comic that you can check out that Stephanie hand paints herself.
I've never checked this out.
Oh, mate, you are missing out.
Worry underscore lines. Yeah. You have a comic.
Oh, comic's a strong word.
How long have you been doing it?
It's a doodle a day, basically. But I haven't done one today. Yeah.
Not
yet.
You're going to do one today, though.
Oh, yeah.
Have you had any ideas for one?
I've had a couple.
You know, me and Steph once had this idea of like sending each other little doodles that we were
doodle
drawing.
Pong.
This sounds and then like we, an said, idea we said that
we
said
we had come up with the name for Doodle Pong, but then Steph said that sounded too much like a whiffy penis.
I did not say that.
No, you didn't say that. Well, I think you call did. It. You went, I don't think that's a nice call sound.
Yeah, maybe.
Call it whiffy penis.
Whiffy penis.
It's another one of my nicknames.
Yeah. Bowl of sesame noodles. Whiffy penis. AKA whiffy noodles.
I think I ate some of those last week.
You can find us at Two in Tank, or I'm at Alistair TB.
I'm at Stupid Old Andy. We're not going to plug a comedy festival show to you
today. Don't even try to come until September if we are doing it then.
Yeah, we'll keep you posted. And thank you again to everyone who came to the show. And
we love you.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.